Welcome to BrotoGP. I'm Kevin, that's Robin, that's Dennis, and after the excruciatingly long summer break, we were treated to the best, nay, perhaps the greatest race of all time in the history of two-wheeled sports. An utterly unpredictable winner, drama galore, start to finish, lead changes on a quantity that you wouldn't even believe. We have so much to talk about. How we will squeeze it into a single episode is beyond me. I'm exploding with excitement. Rob must reel me in by hitting the banner play to start this race podcast. I can't contain myself, Rob, anymore. If you do it, I may jizz all over the screen. Hit that intro.
As Kev said, BrotoGP is back from the summer break. It's been way too long. What's up, guys? I feel like I haven't seen you since Laguna. It's been a while.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you talking to me or are you talking to the legions of fans that are waiting on tooth and nail for us to cover one of the greatest races, not just in two-wheeled sports, not just in motorsports, but one of the single most competitive, thrilling, compelling athletic events since, like, The miracle on ice, and what was it, the 82 Olympics? You're talking about a nail biter, a winner that had no business winning, a winner that saw what he needed to do when everyone said he couldn't do it, when he didn't have the equipment to do it, when he didn't have the skills to do it, when he didn't have the pedigree, the history, or the backup to do it, and cast all that aside and said, everyone loves an underdog, I'm an underdog. Everyone will say my name after this race. Unbelievable sporting event.
To answer your original question, yes, I was actually talking to you guys, but hello to our fans as well. I didn't forget about you.
Absolutely.
Oh. We have been busy in the summer break. Of course, we are busy promoting Riders Law. This podcast brought to you by your California motorcycle accident injury lawyers. If you're watching on YouTube, their massive banner is right behind my head. If you're in the state of California or in a couple of more states coming soon is what I hear. Wow. Please give Riders Law a call. They're amazing lawyers. They support our sport. They support motorcycling as a whole. They support racing. They will make sure that you feel better about an accident or any legal trouble that you get into after you give them a call. So please check them out.
If you saw our interview with Eugene Laverty, that was set up by Riders Law themselves, you will also have noticed that I was wearing this shirt during that interview. Fun fact, I have not washed this shirt since. That's not an exaggeration or like a podcast joke. This shirt is full of Eugene Laverty's spit while he talked. It's all over the front. It's full of my fucking arm gunk. It's got Eugene Laverty. It's got Shalina's perfume from when she hugged me before the interview that we did there. It's just fucking funky in general, and I'm probably never going to wash it, and we will give that away on an episode.
We call that motorsport money. Musk.
We call that Amber and Musk. Amber and Musk.
Did you get Matthew Schultz's chest hair on your shirt by any chance?
I tried to get Matthew Schultz to do that whole interview straight shirtless because that dude has like a 98 pack. What in the hell is going on with his torso? Holy shit, he is confusingly handsome. Unfortunately,
wait, why are you confused?
I got none of his chest pubes or his ball fro on this shirt, but Sonoma is coming up in 5 short days, and it is my mission in life. It is my sole purpose on this existence, on this tiny pale blue dot, like Carl Sagan said, on the spaceship Earth, floating through the cosmos. My only job in life is to get 2 of Matthew Schultz's pubes on this shirt.
So you're saying there's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
All right, let's do a quick plug here for t-shirts.
Shit.
Oh, yeah,
that
right?
That was it right there.
That was
stand up, Rob.
So Kev is wearing the Unone shirt, which came out a little while ago.
And then Rob is wearing a new women's shirt.
Look at his fucking body. Not
this is a men's small.
It's the most efficient body you've ever seen. There is not an extra pound of fat whatsoever. That is the fucking MotoGP of male bodies right there.
That's my right thigh.
Right, exactly.
I've been cycling enough. My thighs have been getting bigger, but it's helpful.
To get serious for a second, Rob is wearing a new shirt that we dropped, the Dovey 8-bit shirt. It is like, what do they call that? Heather Gray, if you're listening on the audio.
It is Athletic Heather Gray.
Athletic Heather Gray. You can find it on our website, shop.brotogp.com. All of our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter has links to it. Not trying to like oversell or whatever, because buy it if you like it. If you don't like it, don't buy it. It's all good. But we sold like 50% of the original stock in the first 24 hours. So we get constant talks. When are you releasing another Iannone shirt? When are you doing more Tricolores? Where's Brotendo? Man, we've never re-released another shirt, and I don't see it happening anytime soon, because I like making new stuff, not rehashing the old. So if you want one, if you're thinking it's up your alley and you like it, Rob, model it one more time.
Standing back up.
Exactly. Look at his junk. You can kind of see his bulge, dude. A little bit of bulginess. Damn. Oh, he's loosening his pants. But snag that shirt. It's pretty rad, I think. I'll have one at Sonoma. Rob's had some at Laguna. We'll also have them at Sonoma, which you can get. International shipping is available. I get this question constantly about internet. Well, if they're not sold out by then, which is a significant possibility. But international shipping, totally available. It's like not even hard, and it's not that expensive to ship a shirt. We ship them to people ask, what about Australia? Bro, we ship like half our shirts to Australia. I love Australia. I kind of want to move to Australia. I feel like I have more friends in Australia than I do in California right now.
The only difficult places to ship were some dude in Hong Kong, because apparently Hong Kong doesn't have zip codes, and stamps.com does not like the fact that he doesn't have a zip code. So I had make up the zip code.
Again, if you guys want one, you better get on it, because I just got a notice that we've sold another one right now.
Bada boom.
Checking the emails.
Anyways, if you want one. Also, I don't know how many are left, but there was limited supply of some of the previous shirts that we had. I think all the Brotendos got sold out. Mm-hmm. Most of the Iannones got sold out. But extra stock that we had, leftovers, all that stuff are on there as well. So
I think there's four white Tricolores in men's small, as I modeled so well.
Nice.
And probably some Iannones in everything but medium.
Boom.
Nice. Yeah, medium just sold out like a few hours ago. All right. I think that's enough plugging ourselves. So actually, we do have one other thing coming up. We got a giveaway coming on soon, but we need ideas for what to do for it.
Should we tell them what we have?
Yeah, let's tell them what we have.
All right. Fuck you guys.
No, that's the opposite of telling them. Go for it.
Oh, yeah, no, okay, yeah. Rob,
why don't you tell them off, Kev?
Yeah, tell them off. Okay, go ahead, Rob. Tell them, Rob.
We have a Eugene Laverty signed helmet to give away.
Oh.
And I believe you are getting your choice of medium or large size. They are both signed.
Can I clarify if these are new or used?
They are brand spanking new.
Ah, darn.
He didn't even put them on. Damn. Could have got some of that talent, in the sweat coming back.
The spitball that Kevin is talking about in his shirt.
Right, exactly.
I really don't remember recording Eugene spitting all over Kevin. But
that version is based on true events. But what Rob said, so Eugene Laverty helmet autographed by the man himself in a medium or a large, depending on your dome. So we did give out like a Dovey replica helmet a while ago. That was fun. But this one will work depending on how big your head is or is not. But what we need to do is figure out how we're going to give it away. It's a pretty cool prize. And give us your ideas. Shoot us Instagram message. Facebook message, post shit on the Army Facebook group page, hit me up on Twitter, and otherwise let us know how you think we should give it away.
I think it's pretty
cool because, I don't want you just to say give it to me, but I'm not saying you can't say that.
It'd be kind
of
dope,
but that's not that good of an idea. But if some guy is just give it to me, three people already tried that, so I don't think it's gonna work.
Dennis, what were you saying there?
I was going to say it's pretty cool because I don't know if you guys remember a long time ago, we gave away a Zarko face shield that he signed. Now we got a full-on helmet. Maybe next time we're going to give away like a full-on race suit from somebody. You know what I mean?
Oh, damn.
Right. Yeah. Oh, God damn. Dang.
Moving on.
We're getting friends. We're getting friends in places. We didn't even talk about the shenanigans that went on at Laguna Seca.
Shenanigans.
Yeah, we'll have to do a whole nother episode on that. Let's actually...
Speaking of Eugene Laverty and plugs and stuff, if you get the helmet, it would match the shirt that he also has that Rob is wearing himself. So Eugene also has his shirt, and he rocks that bad boy solidly.
If you check out the Writer's Law Instagram, there are videos. There are some that I can't show you.
Some. Oh, that's Pro GP After Dark, son.
Bad.
So bad. So bad. Yeah. So actually, everyone that's watching this video on YouTube, if you would be so kind, please like and share this video and then subscribe to our channel. We're trying real hard to get the YouTube going a little better, and we're kind of struggling. So I don't know. I need your help. But let's actually get on to motorcycle racing, because I feel like it's been the standard Joe Rogan 10 minutes here of plugs. Boom. So let's start talking about stuff. So, as Kev said earlier, there is so much to talk about that we're actually going to start here with qualifying, which I don't think we've done in the longest time.
So much to talk about in this race that happened. So many meaningful events took place by a variety of players on the world stage of racing that I don't even know what we talk about. I mean, there's qualifying, there's the race, there's practice. Like, there's Mark Marquez, and then there's...
Oh, I'm going to get to practice later.
Okay. That's going to happen.
So, Dennis, if I'm not mistaken, you actually were camping all weekend, and you did not watch qualifying?
I was completely unplugged, no reception whatsoever, so yeah, no.
How are the kids doing?
They were great. I mean, except for my son. He was being moody. He never left the tent.
I can't even. All right.
That's because he saw the fucking race.
He preempted the race with his emotions. Let me paint the picture here for you.
Yeah.
So in Q2, track conditions were a little tricky. Everyone goes out on rain tires for the first half of Q2, and Mark Marquez is following, I believe it was Dovizioso at some point. And he had already put in a lap time. He didn't care that much. And he turns around, looks behind him, rolls off just a tiny bit. Now, the thing about Mark Marquez, when he slows down just a tiny bit, he's still going faster than the guy at the back of the grid.
Yeah.
Especially in qualifying, right? Especially mm-hmm. in tricky conditions. Mm-hmm. He rolls off just enough. Alex Rins catches up to him. Marquez is still online. They go through one of the corners, and Rins is like, fuck this guy for... God, not supposed to swear for YouTube. And is very unhappy with Marquez's position on track. Passes him rather close up the inside. Just kind of nudges him out of the way just a little bit. There was a tiny gap.
How did it look to you, Rob?
Damn.
Honestly,
checking the tiny gap up the inside.
Honestly, I've been passed worse in practices in Moto America, and I was pissed about those. But if I was Marquez, I don't think I would be pissed about this. Like, full on turnabouts, fair play.
Wait, so are you telling me that Marquez was pissed about it?
So they. Rins gets by, they like go down a straightaway, Marquez passes Rins back, and then they proceed to go into the pit lane together, and Rins is just like, screw this guy, I'm not giving him any room or anything, and Rins is just kind of holding his line. Marquez pulls alongside of him, and this is into pit lane.
Really?
And they're approaching a tire wall, like, you know, there's a barrier where the pit lane just gets a little narrower.
Yeah.
And effectively, Marquez puts his hand on Rins's butt and pushes him a little bit to the left so that he has room to not run into the tire wall, because he didn't want to slow down and get behind Rins. And then they pull into their garages, and their garages are right next to each other.
Awkward.
A little awkward. A little awkward. I mean, just my favorite part is that there is no way that Marquez could be penalized by the regulations because he wasn't going slow enough. Like, they have rules. It's like a certain percentage of some lap time or whatever, that if you're slower than that and you're online, you're blocking, you're cruising, and you get penalized. But it's Marquez we're talking about.
Right. I gotta watch that one, see what all the fuss is about.
All the fuss. Kevin has got so much fuss going on right there. No, so... Yo,
sup? That race was awesome. So much cool stuff. I mean, like, the biggest talking point of the weekend was Marquez touched some guy's butt, and it wasn't his...
Wait, it wasn't his brother? Is that what you said?
Right. Yes, exactly. What? Repeating the punchline of jokes definitely makes the jokes better. The one thing I know is that when you say something funny and like a quip, and then a guy's like, wait, let me repeat that, that makes the joke so much more, like, it makes it hit so much better.
I feel like you actually cut out on my end, so I had to do it there, but I know what you're saying.
And then giving a factual response to me attempting to make fun of the thing you did doesn't make that any better either. What in the hell? This was legitimately the worst race in 10 years. I'm trying my hardest to get people excited to do Dorna's job for them. Mm-hmm. I literally thought, wow, that was so bad. How do I make a fun podcast out of this? Because people depend on me for their entertainment, to where Dorna and Repsol and Yamaha and Ducati have failed to provide. Notice they didn't include KTM because, like, no one expects KTM to be entertaining. And
we can talk about that too.
Yeah, exactly. So what I want to happen for the rest of this podcast is every time I make a joke, I want Rob to deadpan repeat it with like a question mark. Is that the joke you were saying, Kevin?
I don't think I could do it deadpan. That's your your forte there.
Yeah.
Correct.
I thought you were gonna commentate the race for us.
This is the other thing that you do that drives me insane. If we have side things that plans, you can't tell the people about it.
What else do I want to talk about here? Since I'm getting no love from Dennis about Rins and Marquez in the
pit
lane.
I have to see it. I mean, it's hard for me to react when I haven't seen it. But the way that you told me, butt touching and all, sounds pretty intense.
No one was penalized. Rins brought up Marquez's Moto2 crash and how he lost some of his eyesight and then apologized for it later. They both went to the race stewards. Yeah. No, I got nothing. I'm moving on.
I mean, here's the thing. It wasn't that interesting. Like, two fast guys had a slight confrontation. This is what we've got to, is that, like, a guy was in his way and Marquez is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And we're like, holy shit. Remember when Valentino Rossi and Max Biaggi had a straight-up fucking fight?
in the stairwell.
What the fuck?
So the post-race,
like,
press conference, right?
Right in the press conference, they had a fucking fight, dude. They were, like, throwing bows. Remember when Casey Stoner was like, yo, dog, your ambition outweighed your fucking talent. Snap! Like, venom in the tongue coming out of there. And now we're talking about, like, hey, whoa, whoa, bro. Whoa, bro. Watch out. That's too close. That's too close. I don't want to slow down, but that's too close. Like,
is this why it's getting so hard for you, Kev? Because the whole grid is just so soft now?
Do you really want to talk about it?
I feel like you want to talk about it, Kev. I feel like you want to talk about it.
It's like, it's all the shit aspects of 2002 through 2005, but none of the fun aspects. There's nothing new about it. It doesn't fit, like, the current zeitgeist, right? Like, Rossi's over-the-top antics were dope in 2003 because, like, in 2003, everyone had 24-inch spinners on their like, Escalade. Limp Bizkit was still a thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the zeitgeist of 2002 was crazy over-the-top insanity.
Excess.
Like, excess was the most, like, that's not the thing now. This is, like, because no
this
one
is
has
the
any
only
money.
Excess we have now.
Right. No one has any money. No one has, you know, like, it over the topness does it is not a fun, cool thing anymore. It's not awesome. And, like, so all we have is one guy totally dominantly winning everything by such a comical margin. But, like, everyone talks about that time Valentino Rossi got the yellow flag. They gave him a 10-second penalty. He pulls the pin and wins by, like, you know, 13 seconds.
So,
yo, Marquez could do that tomorrow. He could have done it at Bruno. He could have done it at, like, any other track. It's, like, it's all of the crap of that time period, but none of the fun stuff. So it's just like, I mean, you wonder why I've been waving this knife around the whole time, because I'm like 3 seconds away from fucking cutting down the river on the wrist. It's like driving me insane. That race was, it wasn't just boring.
And we're demonetized on YouTube.
Boom. The guy was, hey, if Anthony Jeselnik can literally have a trailer for his YouTube video where he talks about how fun dropping babies is, I can make one off-color suicide remark 23 minutes into a podcast. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, come on, stop already.
I didn't hear about that one. We're not going to do it.
Nope. Anthony Jeselnik is so, he's so funny, and his humor is so dark. I thought about stealing it like I steal Brooke. You know what I'm talking about, right, Dennis?
I'm a fan of
it. It's straight up a fan. Yeah. Right. He makes jokes that we have self-imposed. You can't, we're getting way off track here, but it's funny. When you're done watching the entirety of this video, clicking like, share, subscribe, buying every version of our shirt you can get, entering to win the Eugene Laverty helmet, calling Writer's Law, getting a case, and doing all of those things to make sure we stay afloat, go watch his Netflix special.
All right, well, let's get back to the race, Kev. Is it the race that's really bad, or is it just like a combination of how it's been going on for the past few races, maybe the past couple of seasons?
Let's do a little experiment. The race is going to start here in a second, and then you and Rob talk about it, and I'll let you know how the race is going. Okay. So go ahead. We've had qualifying, and there was a little bit of some drama between Rins and Marquez. Marquez goes on to dominate qualifying by like 2 seconds, which is patently absurd. There's some drama where they postpone the race, blah blah blah, and then the race starts. You and Rob, feel free to talk about the race as you will.
Did you actually enjoy that race, Rob?
No. I knew from the beginning that it was going to be a little lackluster. I thought there might be some fun stuff going on behind Marquez, but it was pretty obvious that he was going to win. And I will tell you why.
Okay.
So I can't wait. We know this from qualifying that it's like the anti Jorge Lorenzo. If you make the conditions very tricky, such that it takes an absurd amount of talent to produce heat in slick tires on a slightly damp track, right? Like we saw Marquez do that in Q2. We saw Miller attempt it and crash in the final corner. I mean, to be fair, Miller, it was raining in the final corner, and Miller went through the corner like 30 seconds after Marquez did, i.e. there was more water on the track. So there was just a greater likelihood that Miller would crash. But he has that talent. He has that ability. Like, not unlike Casey Stoner, who we saw.
And unlike Casey Stoner, 1 minute and 10 seconds into the race, Marquez is in the lead and gapping his opponents. So, yep. I'll continue.
Yeah, so not unlike Casey Stoner, like, he has that ability to just get on the motorcycle and post an amazing lap time essentially when he wants to. No matter the conditions, right? He can ride to the tires, he can ride to the track and do something amazing like that. So when the race is delayed because the track, I don't even know entirely. I'm not even entirely sure why the race was delayed for as long as it was. But it wouldn't have mattered. Like, they could have run it 30 minutes before with a drying track, and it would have been just as bad. It would have been Marquez getting more heat in the tires than everyone else, and having control.
Getting
of
more
the
heat
thing.
In the tires than everyone else, and leading lap one, leading the race after lap one officially as of now.
Dennis, did you enjoy the race?
Not really. I mean, I think Kevin mentioned it before, but nothing really happened behind Marquez, which I was kind of hoping that somebody would make it exciting, either to try to catch up to him or at least make something happen behind him. But no, nothing really. I think, wasn't there like only one DNF for that race?
Morbidelli and Quattararo.
Oh, right, and Mir.
Morbidelli and Mir.
And Mir, they came together.
Not Quattararo. Yeah, so...
Actually a pretty clean race for what I thought was going to be like a pretty exciting race given the conditions. But I didn't know the history, right? Because I didn't watch it live. I watched it when I got home, so I didn't realize that the start was even delayed. But it kind of looked like it was going to be a mixed condition race. But no, nothing really happened. It was
still
pretty
professional. You know what would have made it super interesting? If HRC flubbed another regulation, like that time that Marquez didn't pit in Phillip Island when he was supposed to,
he
missed the one, like, pit lane for quick start procedure is
open
for 1 minute.
Why do you think when Michelin said that the wet tires would only last 12 laps, they would have had a pit stop, why do you think they didn't have a pit stop? And postpone the race.
Oh, that would have been amazing, too. So like the pit lane is only open for 1 minute for the quick start procedure. Like you got, especially if you're at the opposite end of pit lane, you got to be on top of that stuff. You got to leave beforehand. We've seen Moto 2 teams completely screw it up and have to start at the back of the grid. It would have been great if HRC flubbed it.
I remember that Australian round, but we also have talked about how Marquez and his team have kind of.
Hold on, we're about to finish lap two. The riders come around the final turn, and no lead change.
Because, to my point, Marquez and his team, they don't make the same mistake twice. So even if something like that, even if the weather called for a tire change, they weren't going to make the same mistake twice.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you there. I'm just grasping at straws with hypotheticals here.
I know. See, we can't even do that nowadays because we just know that Marquez and his team, like, they won't even let us grasp at straws at this point.
We are regulated to the fact that Jack Miller got third, and everyone's losing their fucking mind. A dude who's been in GP for 5 years got third, and that's apparently a really big story.
Race winner at that.
It is his best dry performance. Dry, like it was 90% dry.
Right, a guy did his best he ever did by getting third after 5 years being in the sport
on a a factory satellite bike. I mean,
who cares
if
you're Australian, it's cool. But I mean, who cares? Like Jack Miller was like the great hope. He was the he was gonna be the guy. It's been 4 or 5 years. Like, it's done, man. He even said, like, yeah, I'm going to sign for Pramac. Where else am I going to go? We're trying to get, like, 2020 bikes for everyone, yada, yada, yada. Like, it's already done. Like, Jack Miller is not the savior, and he's never going to be. He's just grid filler. That he gets third once in a while is not something to write home about.
I mean,
Jack Miller is the next Cal Crutchlow.
He could be the next Dovizioso. He's a little behind, right? Like, we got to take Dovizioso's time at Tech 3. So,
right. Speaking of a little behind, lap 3, riders coming out the final turn, heading to the finish line, 1 minute 57 seconds, and no lead change.
Yeah, I mean, I always, whenever we talk about satellite riders, I always have to remember the Dovizioso Cal Crutchlow Tech 3 era when they actually put up a fight. Not, I shouldn't say put up a fight against satellite riders, but when it was amazing performances. Correct. And I mean, we've seen unexpected things out of Quattararo, and I feel like that's what we have now, right? Is I need someone to defy expectations. This race in no way did anything of the sort. I expect Jack Miller to be there. Like, Luca was watching the race with me, and Crutchlow was in eighth at the time, like kind of early on the race. And she's like, oh, Crutchlow's doing great. I'm like, wait. Okay, no, we'll just... Okay, you haven't watched many races this season. No, he's not doing great. He's on effectively a factory Honda. Mm-hmm. He's had many podiums and has won 2 races before. He should not be in eighth. Like, it's just...
But the most interesting thing Cal Crutchlow did this race was basically say his teammate didn't deserve a 2020 bike, which is one of my favorite things about racing, right, in GP. You don't deserve the ability to compete on an even field. I love GP. You don't deserve a bike. You have to actually be better than people on a worse bike to be able to get the same quality machinery that you get to prove yourself. Like, the only way to get equal machinery is to be better than someone on better machinery, which is awesome, by the way. Like, I get it. Like, we want riders to speak their mind and say things like they are, and I respect Cal for that. Hold on a second. Riders are coming out of the final turn, lap 4, minute 57 seconds, 58, and no lead change. Anyways, I get that Cal says it like it is, and I actually respect him about that, right? He's not sugarcoating himself, but, like, the most interesting thing he said all weekend was he shat on his team, effectively, by shitting on his teammate, and saying he doesn't deserve equal machinery, which is crazy to me. Like, it's one of the things that drives me nuts about racing is that, like, we just know that half the people are on the grid because, like, just to be there. Like, look at what Fabio has done with basically a really good bike and pretty solid support. This rookie comes in out of nowhere and he's going crazy. Like, look at what – every time you get new guys on high-end machinery, they do well. You see your Valentinos and your Jorge Lorenzos and your Mark Marquez's. Like, so many riders, when they get good machinery, like, oh shit, this is what they can do. Why don't we just have everyone on good machinery? And yet, even
Alvaro last year, right, at Phillip Island, is like, oh damn,
right? Oh, like, yeah, well, you know, like, and then what does he do? He goes over to
An unknown Ducati rider, like, had spent so many years in MotoGP on odd equipment, right? Different suspension, different brakes, satellite teams, and then he
Showa suspension, Nissan brakes.
Yeah, and then he gets on a factory bike, and I feel like he had to give Dovizioso the third place, right? But was sitting there the entire time. No, you're right. The number of riders that do well on good machinery, I would say that they outnumber the ones that do bad when they get to good machinery. Like, right. I mean, Ben Spies completely got destroyed on the factory bike, but some weird shit going on there. I can't think of any other ones right now.
I mean, Cup riders going on the final turn, lap 5, and no lead change. I mean, even Ben Spies, not really. Ben Spies gets the factory bike, gets a couple of podiums, and wins a race.
He did
his first season.
Yeah, I wouldn't say categorically better, but he did do better by some metrics.
I mean, he did better by some metrics, and then he broke his shoulder, his suspension broke apart, he joined Ducati, he quit, he stopped racing, and then he fell weirdly into alt-right Twitter, and it's kind of strange.
And that's all we're going to say about that.
Yeah. But I just mean, like, the most interesting Cal did thing the whole weekend was crap on someone. Like,
the funny thing is, it's not interesting to me though, because it was expected,
right?
Like,
exactly.
he's gonna open his mouth, he's gonna shit on someone. I mean, it could be self-deprecating, he could shit on himself, and I think I heard that out of him at some point. It's like, well, what went right this day? The bike made it back into the box or something like that. It probably didn't even happen. We were bad on drive. We were bad mid-corner. We were bad on the brakes. What went well?
Yeah, exactly. It was a good race.
Actually, that brings up a very good point. Like, what the hell sort of mentality is running through Cal's mind if he's not trying to bring up his teammate, if he's not trying to build up the sport, if he's not trying to make all these things better by getting more 2020 RCVs on the grid? Does he think
Nothing.
That
he's just being salty Cal? That's all. I mean, what are you
right?
Doing
he complains salty? That he has to do all the testing, and then when they're like, "Okay, cool, we'll get another guy, another 2020 bike, and you won't do all the testing," and he's like, "Well, no, he doesn't deserve the shit job I have."
I mean, you know that Taka is not getting a raise out of that. Like, he's probably going to take a pay cut. And yes, if he shares the workload for Cal, it's
kind
of a good thing.
In 1 minute 57 seconds into lap 6, riders cross the line, no change.
Oh no. How long could I stand it?
How many more laps left, Kev?
We are 7 laps in. It's 13 seconds into lap 7. Marquez is in the lead. No change so far.
How many laps does this race go on? I don't
we
even
got 20
remember.
Laps
13
left.
More laps?
No, it's not a 26 lap race.
I thought it was 19 laps, actually.
It's a very long track.
It's a long track.
I'm going to go look it up.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. We're looking up how many laps the race was.
Right.
It is a 20-lap race. I think Dennis said that just now.
19, 20, same difference.
Yeah, either way. Right. I mean, you know, Marquez did post his fastest lap of the race on lap 3, even though the track wasn't completely dry yet, and yada, yada. And the tires fall off after 8? Never mind.
Right.
What were we talking about?
I like here? How every race they sell you on that. Tires haven't fallen off since 2007. And they're like, they're going to fall off. They say, and after, they're still posted like record laps. Tires haven't fallen off in a straight decade plus. Tires don't fall off. What are you talking about? They just keep saying it's like I feel like I'm kind of in an abusive relationship, like in a gaslighting situation with the announcers. Like, they say stuff that we know isn't true, and then we second guess, like, are those tires going to fall off? Fuck, does Rins have a chance? I heard these tires fall off. As if the tires falling off wouldn't just help Marc Marquez even more. But that being said, tires don't fall off. And I'm like, wait, are these tires going to fall off? I can't wait. These tires are going to fall off. There's some tension in this race. I know that nothing's happened so far, 7 laps in, but, like, you know, something could happen because these tires are going to fall off. They never do, literally ever. And speaking of that, lap 7, no lead change. Lap 8, here we go.
So Kev, the tires did fall off. Like, it, effectively, Marquez got slower the entire race, right? He posted that fast lap on the third race of 56.9. Then it was in the low 57s, then mid 57s, high 57s, low 58s, high 58s. And it hit 59 on the 19th lap. And then we don't count the last lap because he...
Bro, that is called managing the lead.
Which also means that Dovizioso's tires fell off and Miller's tires fell off and Rins's tires fell off. But
right,
to your point... To your to,
ooh, well,
to absolutely to
you.
Your point, it does make it easier for Marquez to win the race, right? When we're talking about four riders that are unbelievably good at controlling tire wear on factory teams that have managed to, in the short amount of dry race time or dry practice time that they had, find a setup that enabled them to control tire spin, tire wear. If you put all of them at the front, they're going to end up in the exact same order they started in because no one's going to screw it up. The only reason why we get an exciting race when the tires were off is because someone like Quartararo like busts his ass up to the front and does some crazy stuff, and then his tires fall off. So he blocks or the tire fall off is so bad that those riders have to go really, really slow and it allows the other guys to catch up kind of.
That's of course
on.
Is sort of the problem, right? There's only one story taking place right now, which is Fabio. It's like, I don't know if you guys heard, like, there was a Billie Eilish concert and I guess like Tom York from Radiohead came up to her and said, like, you're the only one doing anything fucking interesting these days. That's like how I feel. Like, I'm the grizzled old guy from the late 90s who was like, wow, Fabio, you're the only one doing anything interesting right now. That's my problem. If Fabio doesn't do anything interesting, it's fucking boring. Yeah.
And he's on a
same story. And he's on a Yamaha on a brand new team, and he's still a rookie.
The Fabio interesting thing was exactly like Zarco doing something interesting this round. Did something interesting until the first 50 feet of the race.
Oh my God. Oh my God. No one has gotten that swallowed up since the last time Rob got on Grindr. That was the worst.
That was the worst shrinkage in wet conditions.
What in the hell happened?
Turtled up, man. Turtled up.
Okay. I kind of knew that was going to happen.
I got to give myself that grinder. I got to give myself a clap. Because that was not planned.
What was that billboard that was outside your house?
I just thought of that. That was like everyone was shitting themselves over the fact that he qualified on the front row. He's Zarco. He's in Parc Fermé. Yeah. Has anyone ever like? He didn't stall the bike, right? Like, he didn't pull Fabio earlier this year and get on the front row and then stall. And you're like, fuck, rookie mistake, right? Shit happens. That kind of sucks. He didn't stall the bike. He didn't do anything wrong. The KTM just sucks that bad.
No, no, the track was wet on that side. Like, it was full wet. Oh, it wasn't standing water, but it was full wet over there. Like, and I saw
for the guys right behind him. The same thing.
That is a very good point. No, actually, I need to look at the starting grid. Like, who got a... where's the starting grid? Like, I have to see if people on the right side of the track got a much worse start than everyone else. All right, Zarco. All right, nope. Right behind him, Rins. Not a bad start. Behind him, Vinales. Terrible start. Morbidelli, terrible start.
Vinales doesn't count. He does not count.
Yeah. Okay. So everyone... I mean, Petrucci started in eighth. I feel like he was about there as well. All right. So, yes.
You guys remember that Saxon Ring race where Miller was like at the front and everybody else was at the back? We can give that to Vinales and he'd still find a way to be at the back of the grid in the first
Right. Four. Oh, yeah. No, he totally would. And Wait, it wasn't it Brattle? No, it was Brattle that was like sitting up there all by himself in Sachsenring.
It was Miller.
There's been more than one. Miller's was he was the front and then people were still on the grid. It was Brattle when everyone was in pit lane.
The pit lane.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. It's absurd that there were two. Like, can't we just make rules that fit these situations? They've tried.
Right.
No, yes. Okay, Kev, I'm going to agree with you for the second time in this episode.
Yes. Zarco chuffed it so bad. But, I mean, it's like, don't expect things from someone they can't deliver. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. The guy got – he shouldn't have been third to begin with. And what are you going to do? Like, he has had no – like, you're not just going to, like, be horrible all year and have your boss talk mad crap about you and all that and then just suddenly be super competitive, like, because you had a couple weeks off. It just doesn't really work that way. And that was like, I almost felt bad for the bro because it was like comical. Like, what in the hell is happening? This guy went from third to 15th in three turns.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to applaud another qualifying performance because that is what this episode is about, is talking about qualifying.
Right.
I mean, he put in that time on wet tires. So, yep. No, amazing performance. He had the fastest wet tire time in Q2. And that was amazing. And now I'm going to move on because no one really wants to hear about that.
All right.
Kev is yawning. He's like, signal. Yeah. You Marco Melandri.
That's all that's left, man.
Oh, God damn it. Wait, how many laps are left in this race?
Ugh. I stopped counting because, like most people, by lap 8, I turned it off.
I nodded off just a little bit, kind of in the middle, and then I perked back up when Jack Miller passed someone.
So when we were talking to Homeboy at World Superbike a couple weeks ago, he talked about how he listened to the show on 1.5 speed. So the whole time he was talking to me, he thought I was high, which I was. But
to clarify, he thought we were high there at the track because we were going so slow.
Right, because he was used to hearing me at 1.5 speed. So taking the technical director of World Superbike's advice, Scott Smart, I watched the race of GP at 1.5 speed.
You can do that? Oh, damn.
Yeah, I don't know.
What did it look like?
Huh? It looked exactly the same. One really talented guy in front, way out front, clearly managing the lead, who was never worried about anything and in no threat whatsoever.
It just meant that Kevin got bored a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But he also was over the boredom a lot sooner.
Yes.
No. We're not even over the boredom right now.
It meant I wasted 30 minutes of my day instead of 46 minutes of my day like all you other plebes. Y'all are living in 2019. I'm in 3019 watching Marquez races at 1.5 speed.
That's what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
That's terrible. When you said 3019, I thought of
South Park.
Oh, God,
that's
terrible
title of Rob Sex Tape.
Oh, no.
Also, the title of Rob Sex Tape.
And on that note,
hey, you're a shower, not a goer. What do you want me to say?
Wait, goer or grower?
Both. Goer. You gotta get fucking get to town, dog. I don't know.
All right, I have one more point for this thing. I feel like we need to talk about the VR 46 Academy exodus. Because if so, Dennis hasn't heard yet.
What happened?
Kev, do you want to fill him in here?
Yeah.
You fill him in with the facts, and then I'll fill you in with the causes.
With the good stuff.
All right.
Kevin will stuff me with the good stuff.
That, so, yes. That's when me and Dennis go camping. Excuse me. Dennis and I.
Okay, so facts that I know. Booliga has left the VR 46 Academy. There's one other guy that left that we don't care as much about. Lorenzo Baldessari has also left the VR 46 Academy. I feel like you don't need to Meg Lorenzo Baldessari. I mean, he's not exactly having a great Moto 2 season after Dunlop changed the tires on him.
I wasn't because I didn't like them. I was saying like they're out, they're gone. Like,
yeah, they're gone.
Not on the team.
Yeah, they not out. On the team. So what I really want to know. Like, okay, we knew Booliga was going to get kicked out. Like, he should have been kicked out years ago, like, when Fanati got kicked out and all the other stuff. Like, just not living up to expectations.
Sure.
Kind of doing...
Couldn't take the next step. Won the CEV championship, but couldn't take the next step. Shit happens. Peaked in CEV.
Yeah, but Balda. Balda seems like the next Italian hope for motorcycle racing.
He certainly seems like a GP, like a premier class rider. Like, there's a space for him in the premier class. You know what I mean? Like, he seems like part of the sort of hostile takeover of GP, right? Like, he could be on the... Absolutely.
So what the hell is going on?
I can tell you what's going on. So, it's a multi-layered situation. So, the VR 46 Academy, super awesome. Everyone loves it. A bunch of riders that everyone's into. We talked about this before, the franchise system, starting from CEV, bringing them all the way up, the takeover, right? And then what happens? Who runs the talent pool of the GP, the VR 46 team? One Uccio. So Uccio is the talent director. Rossi does not run the talent direction. It's actually Uccio's job. He's a talent. He's the like head of talent acquisition for the VR 46 team. Yeah,
and Mahu for will the give Sky 40. Yes. VR 46
so,
team.
So and there's talk about Sky leaving them as a sponsor as well. So the number one guy involved of all of those things gets married, and suddenly everyone bounces. This bitch is Yoko owning that team like 2 days into being a part of it, right? What is happening?
Wow. Yeah.
Right.
That's all I got. Is it, wait, what's her name? Do we know?
I have no idea.
I'm going to go with it's Italian.
Mm-hmm. I can't even believe that Uccio in the first place is the talent or the head of talent for VR 46.
Why not? The guy's been involved. This is the thing that drives me nuts. Uccio gets so much crap because he's best friends with Rossi. Because he's the guy that goes way back before Rossi, who's genuine, who probably tells it like it is, doesn't kiss his ass, and is the one guy Valentino can trust because they've been bros since before he was famous. Uccio's been in the paddock and in some way involved around motorcycle racing on an intimate level since like 1996. The guy has seen all kinds of talent. He's seen all different phases. He knows motorcycling. Yeah, he's not an athlete, but like neither was Bill Walsh, right? Like Bill Walsh is the greatest NFL coach there ever was. He didn't play professional. Like you don't have to be a professional racer to be like a head of a team or talent acquisition, all of those things. Uccio has been involved in that sport on a variety of levels for like 25 years across all different eras. That guy probably knows more about what it takes because he's lived next door to the guy who has what it takes more than anyone in history. Like, he knows. He sees it. He's in charge. Find those guys and ride, bring them up. But then, like, what happens? You know, like, you know, he punches above his weight a little bit with a, like, a pretty good-looking girl, and then the team goes down.
I mean, I was going to compare him to Alberto Puig.
Yeah, and which I was going to say was the person I was thinking of when I think of a talent head in MotoGP.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but he kind of is the top tier there, right? If if there's someone that we know that is good at finding talent anywhere, it's Alberto Puig. He may not be liked by, I don't know, there are rumors.
Anyone?
By anyone. He may not even be liked by the riders that he found and brought into the sport and built up to be factory MotoGP riders because of some falling out. But that's the thing that I'm missing from Uccio. Like, what results does he have? I mean,
well,
I guess...
You got to remember a couple of different things there. Like, I'm not hating on Puig. Like, he's like Darth Vader, right? You got to, like, build the death. Pretty much. But Puig is not... Puig has no restrictions. Any country, any nationality, any rider from any series. Uccio has a specific set of super narrow parameters. Find Italian riders and bring them up. Convince them to basically move next door to the ranch, which is one of the reasons why they've actually said that he hasn't moved. Like, he's not basically a part of the cult, so to speak. But, like, right? But Puig has a totally different set of parameters. Puig is under any means... Puig is like the Stalin of GP, right? Under any means necessary, find the right guy. We don't care what you do. Burn any bridges, say anything bad, do whatever you need to do to get us the number one talent. Uccio's is totally different. Uccio is basically tasked with resurrecting Italian racing. So,
yeah,
like, that's part of why they had...
different tasks. Yeah.
Right. Puig has one task: find the next world champion and make sure he's on a Honda.
Okay.
Uccio's is get like 10 riders in GP.
So before he even got married, how would you rate Uccio's performance so far in looking for that Italian talent?
Well, they got Morbidelli won the Moto2 championship and he got into GP, and now he's on a Yamaha.
From the
Pecco Bagnaia won the Moto2 championship and won on a Mahindra. So if you look at what Uccio's done, Uccio has directly fostered multiple world champions.
And I think, and Morbidelli essentially coming from World Superstock 600,
right,
and not following the common track there is even
at
more
right
credibility.
Right.
To Uccio.
So he got, you know, now neither of them are doing super good in GP right now, although Morbidelli's doing a hell of a lot better this year. Pecco is obviously literally in the grand scheme of, or the grand tradition of Bro GP predictions, Pecco's having like the worst year imaginable, where I said he would do better than Miller by the end of the year. But, you know, I think he's done pretty good. He's got two VR46 Academy riders in GP, but they're restructuring the team. I'm not really sure what's going on or why the exodus is happening, but it's definitely interesting to see them basically achieve their goal of getting more Italian riders on good bikes in GP and then watching the team suddenly go through, like, you know, internal struggles once that's happened.
It seems like such an odd time for it too, because like that came out, and because like so many riders are in Moto2 are kind of in their silly season right now. It just seems like, don't do it now, wait until after all that dust has settled and then plan for 2021 when all the factory contracts are up, right? And therefore, and not just all the factory contracts, but pretty much everyone but Tito Rabat's contract, because he just re-signed for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Right? Like every single slot on the grid is going to be practically wide open, and why would they restructure now? I mean, Balda needs help in Moto2, but he doesn't, like, you shouldn't be letting go the one of the top three guys in the championship. And I guess, I don't know, but apparently word is out too that it's just kind of, it's all amicable. They're like, all right, well, we're going to move on to new things. And I get that. Like, you know, you kind of get into a rut, especially Buliga, right? Stuff's not working for him, right? If he needs to find a different rider coach to up his game, so be it. Balda, I mean, is he really blaming VR46 on his current results in Moto 2?
Yeah, and right. I was going to ask, is this split from VR46, are we considering it almost like career suicide for these riders, or not necessarily a bad...
Well, one of the, like, good big question. Things in that is that, like, you know, Italy is actually a super young country in the grand scheme of things. Italy, like, my grandfather's from Lucca and all that stuff. Like, traditionally, Italy is Italy. It's a group of city-states, so to speak. Like, you're not Italian. You're Roman. You're Lucan. You're Venetian, right? You're Sicilian. Yeah. Like, you're not...
You're Max Biaggi. Got it.
Right. Exactly. But the idea being that it doesn't necessarily... Just because I get the... like, they have this plan, which is to elevate Italian writing. But that doesn't necessarily play into the cultural differences of, like, the country of Italy itself, which some of those guys... Hey, man, I don't want to move to your fucking ranch. Like, I'm... because just because we sort of share, like, a lot of vowels in our names. Like, I get their grand scheme of things. But yeah. I have always wondered if there's a little internal strife from there. Like, because, like, if you talk to my grandpa, Romans weren't even Italians. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you were from Rome, you weren't Italian at all. You were Roman. Don't even, you know, and there is still these cultural lines drawn in Italy that I've always wondered if, like, this mission plan of getting as many Italian riders as possible was a lot harder than it sounded because of, like, it's like America, right? Like, yeah, I'm from California, but you throw me in, like if you have a talent scout for podcasting and you slam me and fucking Joe Bob from Alabama in the same booth, we might not really see eye to eye on stuff because, like, we're pretty culturally different, you know what I'm saying?
And, like, depending that's not, on like, where the talent competition is, if it's in Alabama, you're gonna lose your ass,
right? And I'm way not right. Yeah, it's totally different, right? That's, and it, even east, even Eastern California to Western California. If you're in San Francisco, and you go up to Northeast California, they consider themselves fucking part of the state of Jefferson. They're not even California. You know what I mean? Like, this a lot of times
there's
arbitrary. Yeah, you get it. There are a lot of times just arbitrary drawn. So I'm not necessarily sure these things always felt as smooth as they was. It always had a weird culty vibe. They all moved there. They dressed the same. They all do exactly the same stuff. And I sort of have often wondered, like, at what point when the name is the VR46 Academy, these guys are trying to make their own brand stand out on their own. At what point should they kind of change that name? Because it's like, how long do you want to live in Bro's shadow?
I mean, I always kind of had the opinion that they should live in Valentino Rossi's shadow until they get to GP, and then they build their brand from
and
that.
And then done.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, unfortunately, like, for Franco, that's not working out because his results aren't there, right? If he was pulling, like, the Quartararo stuff, then he could do exactly that, right? He would be mm-hmm. the Jerry Curl would be off the hook. He would instantly have the name. Everyone would be talking about him in the same way they were talking about Fabio, and he would have his own brand. Rossi would still sell his t-shirts because he sells everyone's shirts except for Marquez's.
Right.
I think he even sells Marquez's now. I don't know. But the brand would build there. Like, I don't know. The Moto 2 riders, even if you're outside of VR46 Academy, I don't think that brand is going to come. But that whole point that you just brought up about Italy not necessarily being one country is rather interesting. I mean, how does it compare to Spain? Like, because that's all we ever heard before the VR46 Academy. That's all we ever kind of attributed some of the Spanish success in MotoGP was the fact that the government was subsidizing the kart tracks and all the racing to get those riders the development that they needed to make it into MotoGP.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, is it? Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if they're more just one solidified country that's able to kind of put all that together. Well, and I guess that's the difference, right? Valentino Rossi is not the government, maybe, except in Tivulia.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Way to go, Kev.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak from a little experience. I mean, my great-grandfather was kicked out of Italy for being an anarchist. and that's real.
Wait, a what? So,
my great-grandfather was kicked out of Italy for being an anarchist, so the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Not really.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not necessarily – it's pure speculation, right? I'm purely –
That's what we
like,
do here.
But when you look at when you see something doesn't make sense, like everything makes sense because cause and effect is a real thing. What happens is things don't make sense because as humans we like to view things through like a narrative, which isn't how the world actually works. Everything makes
patterns.
Sense.
Yeah,
we find patterns that aren't necessarily there, or we look for things that we think. The problem is our thought processes are almost entirely built via watching fictional shows or reading fictional stories, which we tend to think there is a clearly delineated cause and effect. So if we don't see it, we're like, oh, things don't make sense. But everything makes sense. Like, why Baldessari leaves actually makes total sense. We just don't know the reason. So we're like, wow, this doesn't make any sense. But it totally makes sense. There's a perfectly valid reason. Because Moto 2 up and comer does not leave MotoGP or leave VR46, who has gotten two riders to GP on pretty decent bikes, unless there's a pretty valid reason. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Romano Fenati getting unceremoniously just booted from there. Like, wow, that doesn't make any sense. Well, then they're like, wow, I think he said some bad shit, like Uccio's mom or something, or his mom and Uccio got it. Like, you put someone's mom in the middle of a fight, you got to take the mom's side. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, that one, you know, kind of came together towards the end there.
You right, really but there it makes sense. It's just that we don't know, and no one's really saying anything.
Well, isn't – I think Balda's going to Pons Racing next year. Mm-hmm. This article is in German. That doesn't help. And that does mean – so Pons Racing was actually hoping to find the funding for two riders. Wait, no, not Pons Racing. I'm mixing this
up. Yeah, what are you talking about?
No. No, he's replacing Sam Lowe's at whatever the hell team Sam Lowe's is on that we don't care about because Sam Lowe's is currently riding there. And Sam Lowe's team. There we
Grissini.
Go. Thank you. And so Grissini is unable to find funding to run two bikes next season.
Mm-hmm.
So Sam Lowe's is getting the axe. And that's right. Kind of like that's the snowball for the Moto 2 silly season. That's that Balda moved. So everyone else has got to move. And, like, Hafish is coming back. Alex Marquez, all his GP prospects dried up, so he's just going to stay put. Hafish actually kind of, what, he burned the
bridge?
Well,
the big rumor that I've heard regarding Alex Marquez is that he's not staying put. He's making the switch to Petronas with a guaranteed seat in MotoGP in the following year.
I also heard that, but I don't believe it. There's does the Marquez clan let him go to a satellite Yamaha?
I don't think it's up to them.
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
They're taking a page from HRC's book, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Fight fire with fire. There you go.
I mean, to be fair, the easiest way to get a really good factory ride is to go to a satellite Yamaha.
And what I was Correct. Saying, Rob, is I don't think it's up to the Marquez clan. I think it's obviously up to HRC or Repsol. And if they already have the best of the Marquez, then who gives a fuck about Alex? Sorry, I swear. I swore, my bad.
God, we need to cut back so much.
Yeah.
YouTube doesn't like it. No, you're right. I mean, why would they need Alex Marquez when he can't even do well in Moto 2 long enough to win the title?
Well, he'll probably win the title this year. But, yeah, so we're going back to the VR46 thing. I'm sure there's a valid reason or a restructuring. I see a couple of things. One, they've had a couple of big hits. Pekka won the title. Morbidelli won the title. They both got the Moto 2. But they've had some pretty big misses. Stefano Manzi was a huge miss. Buga, a huge miss. I mean, at one point, you know, these are big investments. You know, they have a big, you know, Sky Sports is no small. That's like the equivalent of having, you know, an American team sponsored by ESPN. It's not like that's not small money being thrown around. And to have a couple high profile big misses is like on the integer scale, right? Like that's more weighty than high profile wins. Big misses are rough. People don't like to spend money to see Stefano Manzi get 23rd. People don't like to spend money to see Buluga like not do well.
It's they seem to be floating around like a 50-50 success rate here. Like that's not a good look.
Not as solid as it should be for a team whose sole purpose is to cultivate riders.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like if Pooj's success rate was 50%, no one would be talking about him in the way that we are. I don't know. Maybe he has actually if we bring up the fact that or you were talking earlier about how he just picks any rider and gets them to HRC, like he was put in charge of the Asia Talent Cup and we haven't really seen the fruits of that labor just yet, but there are some interesting prospects that are moving through the grids right now. So I don't know, maybe like when you limit him in the same way that Uccio is limited, like maybe Pooj isn't the
right. That's a pretty limited thing.
Finding.
I don't think the Asia Talent Cup was about finding the next world champion. The Asia Talent Cup was about like setting the ground. Asia Talent Cup was like setting up your AAA ball team. It's not really about getting some of the majors. It's about setting up the infrastructure to do so. Like, the Asia Talent Cup was
like
basically
colonizing Mars, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that was, you know, setting up the infrastructure to eventually bring these guys up because they see exactly what that's going to do, right? Like, they know where the money is. They see these tracks. They see the rabid fans. They see the unbelievable amount of merchandise being sold and fan attendees. You know, they're already talking about trying to get another race in potentially Vietnam. I think the Asia Talent Cup with Pooj was not about finding the next Casey Stoner, Tony Elias, and, you know, Danny Pedrosa. That was about laying the groundwork so those guys can come out in 15 years.
That was about 30,000 more tickets at all of the tracks in Southeast Asia.
Correct. Right.
Yeah, which is a good look for Dorna.
Right, because we all, as like American fans, like that's the same thing I've said a million times. We're the mature market, right? Like a lot of us have been watching for 10, 20, longer than that, 25 years. A lot of these fans coming out of, you know, Malaysia, Vietnam, Southeast Asia in general, they haven't been watching that long. So this, like, complaint about Marquez, so to speak, it's still new to them, right? They're watching Rossi in America in 2003. It ain't boring yet. It's rad. They haven't gone, like, every single generation goes through this thing where everyone loves whoever's winning, and it, like, until the next guy comes, right? Like, and in America, that was Valentino. You know what I'm saying? Like, so they're all watching Marquez and they're loving it. Or maybe they're no, hold on. It's a new enough series that they haven't gone through this loop a couple of times to start getting jaded enough yet. Where a lot of the people that you're seeing in more Western markets are like kind of jaded by it. You might say you don't know, but that's my personal opinion, man. These dudes are loving the sport still. They don't. It's still so new and so fresh. Like, if you're like 19 years old and you're dating this chick and she gets like really drunk and she like gives up the booty, you're like, I'm talking about the booty, not the booty, but the booty, right? It's so rad. You're like, oh my God, this is happening. And it's rad. And it's rad for like a while, even though it doesn't change and it's not, right? And it's just kind of the novelty of it. But like, if things don't move on, you're like, okay, well, I mean, we've been doing this for a while now. We haven't like spiced it up. That doesn't really get me going anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the same thing. Like, those dudes are still just getting like booty hole. And they don't really care how long it lasts or whatever. They're just like, they're telling their friends, like, I got the fucking booty hole last night. That's what's happening.
Oh, that works on so many levels. It's terrible.
Right. No, so that's what's happening.
So I'm not gonna like add to the analogy for this one for my counterpoint here, but because it would just go terribly wrong. I look at the newness that was Jonathan Rea winning the World Superbike Championship and how quickly I was able to get over that, right? Mm-hmm. He was the underdog. He was on the Honda. He won a few races. It was like, holy crap, you know? He finally gets on a good bike and does amazing things. And And that the similarity between that and the Marquez story is the same thing we say with the T-1000, the complete lack of what I would say is personality.
Like, here's the thing. You could say, like, Marquez is, like, one of the greatest racers of all time. He may go down as the greatest racer of all time. Watching Marquez is like watching perfection, right? It's like dating to 10. It's like you have a chick or a dude who's, like, straight up filet mignon, right? Champagne and filet mignon. But if you have filet mignon for dinner every night, sometimes you just want a quarter pounder.
Sometimes, God, they sometimes would be over it so fast.
You just want some shitty chicken. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's all you need.
To go in your shitty walk.
Just something
Shitty sushi. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes, right. Yeah. It doesn't matter how good it is. If that's all you get, you are ready to go. Like my friend Nick used to always say, show me a hot chick and I'll show you a guy who's sick of her shit. And that goes for show me a hot dude and I'll show you a guy who's sick of her shit, a girl who's sick of his shit, however you want to say. I'm not putting that gender specific. I'm just saying, show me something hot and interesting and then only show me that for 4 years, and I am so over it. No offense, but fucking Mark Marquez is not a Mark Rothko painting. I can't just stare at it for 20 years and still think it's awesome. Give me something new.
God damn it.
It kind of irks me a little bit when I do this Ray and Marquez comparison, but that's a different discussion altogether.
Why does it irk you?
Because he still likes Ray, and he doesn't really like Marquez.
No, it's not that I don't like Marquez. It's just they're different. Marquez was, when he came into the GP, he was already a 10. Ray was not. He was just like the girl next door that happened to just finally.
That was exactly my point. Even
so, Ray was riding a Honda. He had glasses.
Yes.
And a ponytail and paint
braces
on his overalls.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the paint, you know, he had paint on his overalls, for Christ's sake, and glasses. He gets in that Kawasaki. Mm-hmm. He pulls the glasses off. Mm-hmm. He pulls the scrunchie out. He shakes
his hair. Slow motion.
In slow-mo. You can't even imagine. Elmo's fire is playing in slow-mo in the background, and he's all that.
So that's the thing. I remember when he wasn't all that. That's why I'm not mad if he's still strutting it right now, because he's all that. Marquez, I don't remember him ever not being all that. I remember him being this good in Moto 2, in 125. So I don't know. They're not the same to me because of the history that I know from them.
How many more years of she's all that being like her, she being a dick, will it take for you to realize that she's a dick and you got to get over it?
I'll let you know, but definitely Bautista didn't do him any good because, you know, Bautista brought that challenge, and I'm seeing a different type of Ray that I haven't seen in the past 4 or 5 years.
Mm.
But anyway, like I said, that was a different discussion altogether.
Dennis found something interesting in the, you have a valid point there. It's just I was over it a while ago, and I
can't blame you.
I saw a chance for her to get knocked down a peg, and by her, mm-hmm. I mean Jonathan Reyes, so I'll just say him, and then he like wins Suzuka, and then like what's his face, who's getting re-signed
to Kawasaki.
Never mind.
Johnny Ray is very reminiscent to me of the Matt Mladen kind of effect, where what bugs me about Ray isn't his total. There you go. Isn't mm-hmm. Why are you showing me the Nikki sign?
Because I wanted to. I haven't.
All right. Cool. I mean, I'm not complaining. You throw up Nikki whenever you want, but I'm just saying, like, Johnny Ray runs into Matt Mladen. Him winning does not change the story. Johnny Ray is not going to GP. He's not getting a factory ride. He's not changing bikes. He's running the Suzuki in AMA, and he's just winning a fucking 1,000 races and getting paid a lot of money to do it. There is no change. There's nothing different taking place. So when Johnny Ray wins, this is why it drives me nuts up Marquez. He's never leading Repsol. He's never going anywhere else. I don't necessarily care that Marquez wins most of the races all the time. I've said this a million times about Valentino. Valentino He claims he didn't like all of the PR obligations of Honda, yada yada. I think that dude saw the writing on the wall that his personal brand was dropping off by being too dominant, and so he went for a challenge that would make him even more famous and still loved. The problem is Ray and Marquez aren't doing that, and I get it. They want to win races. That's their job. They're uber competitive people, so I'm not really decrying them, but Johnny Ray is just like Mladen. Mladen was never going to World Superbike. He was paid, at the time, one of the highest paid racers in the world, if not ever. He was racing and winning, and he was in a comfortable spot. His family was set up. Johnny Ray is the same thing. That dude has kids. He's winning titles. He's getting paid well. He's in a comfortable spot, and he knows he's never going to GP based on that because it hasn't happened yet. He got his shot. He rode a couple of rounds on the Repsol Honda. Nothing ever came from it, and he's not going anywhere. So watching Johnny Ray win titles to me is like Rich Oliver in 250cc. It's just holding the story up.
I have a solution I'd like to propose.
All right, propose it. Like, Dorna, listen up quick. Dennis has a motherfucking idea.
Can I guess? Can I guess what your solution is?
What is it? What is it?
Ducati signs Johnny Ray.
Sort of. Sort of. My solution that I'd like to propose is more like, why don't the championships impose a title cap on rider and team combination? Like, if you've won two championships on the same bike, you got to go. You got to go to a different team, a different bike. You can't retain the same rider. That's the only way you're going to do it. Because why else would somebody else who's successful in their current team and bike going to leave?
Well, you make them. There are other sports that have this kind of stuff in place, like,
what?
You know, not the same, but similar, right? So if you do well in the NFL, your draft picks are lower. Price caps. Yeah. If your draft picks are lower, so your ability to sign new talent is reduced, right? Mm. So HRC could say, like, you can't sign, you know, other teams get first dibs, and also you have revenue sharing, right? So in, like, in football, small market teams make money off large market teams because of revenue sharing with the teams, right? So the Patriots are widely viewed. The Cowboys are widely viewed. But, you know, smaller teams aren't so widely viewed. There's revenue sharing, right? So you could say, like, Repsol makes this much money on sponsor, but they have to share some of that money with Real, Aventia, you know, Ducati, vice versa. So oddly enough, in a lot of sports, there are these sort of, like, socialist, communist, like, parity, even playing field aspects built into the rule system.
I.e. the successful ones?
I.e. the really successful ones. But we don't have that in GP, so I don't think that your idea that you're limited to how good you can do is true. I think that's, like, you know, I mean, no offense, but, like, you're an idiot and that was a terrible idea. But I do think that
Cal Crutchlow is been brainwashed by the structure of the sport that he is talking shit about his teammate and trying to prevent him from getting a better ride.
Right, this is a good, exactly, right? He's, like, indoctrinated, so to speak. Like, he's been he's been indoctrinated thinking this is the normal way, is that we don't want people on an even playing field. Taka Nakagami, according to Cal, doesn't deserve an equal bike to him or to Mark Marquez. Why not? That's like saying that the Patriots only have to score 80 yards, go 80 yards to get a touchdown, but the Rams have to go 100 and the 49ers have to go 120. It's crazy, right? It's totally nuts that that's the way that GP is set up, but it's totally beholden to the manufacturers.
It's been swinging the other direction, right? Like, we used to in GP have kind of like the Ferrari tax, like in Formula One, right? Like, HRC was getting the bulk of the funds just because they were HRC, because they were providing so many bikes. Now the satellite teams are, now the subsidies are spread out, right? Like, there's some balance in the middle, right? Like, we need to prevent the bottom team from sticking around so that when you suck, like, you're gone, like, someone can replace you. But we need to prevent the top team from taking everything and being at the top all the time. And GP has been getting a lot better over the last couple of years. I don't
think, but in World Superbike, it's exaggerated as fuck. it's, you know, the disparity between the top team in GP and the fifth team in GP is way smaller than the top team in World Superbike and the fifth team in World Superbike.
Yeah, there hasn't been much publication about the subsidies and the profit sharing from TV markets and all that stuff for World Superbike. So I feel like we should call someone that knows more about that.
Somebody smart about
someone
it,
smart.
Maybe?
No, but it's just...
someone with a penny in their pocket, so to speak. Yes.
But it's just... Where was I going with that?
So here's it. The World Superbike has played around with these like pseudo rules that were supposed to make like it more entertaining, but were clearly defined to try to make some kind of parody, but they were poorly designed because the idea of changing the rules, like we're going to shuffle the grid, then we're going to have
they were a compromise between what the factories wanted and like the rulemaking organization being like, no, we have to do something because you guys suck. But if we change the rules to exactly what you don't want, you're going to leave. And we can't afford that right now.
Can't afford that either.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and that's there are rumors floating around right now in Moto America that that factory involvement is going to be reduced next year. A lot of them were started by someone that we're not going to talk about. And they're probably half baseless. But even if one factory seat is reduced, that's going to be one name that doesn't get a ride that, like, you know, isn't paid their, I'm picking a random number, 150,000 to race the motorcycle that year. And like maybe Tony Elias retires. If Tony Elias retired to go enjoy his new baby and his baby mama, like, and just have that sort of life, that would be terrible for Moto America, right? World Superbike feel like kind of in the same situation with all these rules, right? So they're like, it's not like years ago with MotoGP where Dorna was able to pull the rule back from them. It took them forever with CRT, but they were able to accomplish it. And now they have much more control of the rule book. They can do things that are better for the sport because the factory involvement is kind of stuck there, right? Like, I mean, Suzuki and Aprilia
are both...
Right,
they can do things like the concessions, right?
Yeah.
Certain teams that don't do as well could have more. I think we need to increase the concessions ability. KTM and Aprilia should have significantly more concessions.
That would be great.
Significantly
if they did.
More
yeah.
concession.
I mean, and the problem now is it's still very expensive to produce a race winning motorcycle in MotoGP.
Correct.
Right? KTM, what was it, 200 million euros over 4 years, or was it 250
over
250
five? 250 over
five. Yeah.
And what's the catch 22, right? We give you more concessions so you can test more. Well, what does testing do? It costs. What does developing
so
a bike
more.
Do? Cost money. So
Yamaha,
there's got to be.
Like, it just came out this round, especially from, what was it, I think FP4, Neil Spaulding was on the microphone and was talking about the development that Yamaha is doing to make their program better. And essentially, one of the main things that came out was the budget is now larger. That's what you have to do to compete against Ducati and Honda. I mean, mostly Honda. Like, I don't know where Ducati fits into that tier. They may be spending less. But with how many winglets they keep producing, I kind of doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it takes. Like, KTM spending 250 million euros over 5 years, probably not going to be enough to win the championship. Will it be enough to win a race? Maybe. Will it be enough to produce
and
Ducati or Honda?
A different model, right? Like, Honda races so they can sell bikes, but Ducati races sells bikes so they can race.
Yeah. They race because they
like
want to.
They race because they want to specifically. Like, they sell bikes to afford the ability to go racing, so to speak. You know, like, you know.
And they seem to be the only one
who can pull that off.
Yeah. The boutique brands are the ones that are able to do that while also selling 60,000 euro motorcycles successfully and selling them out. It's a completely different market than what the Japanese are trying to accomplish with, you know, selling a million scooters in Southeast Asia.
Right, exactly.
We need to
sell a million 125cc two-stroke Marc Marquez branded bikes in Thailand.
It'd be hilarious if Honda or if Ducati started selling cheap scooters in Southeast Asia.
I'd buy one because I still don't have that Zoom.
But Dennis, to get back to your very your first point there, I don't think such a rule would work just because He would. I mean, it would upset the apple cart too much. It would. I don't know. No one would be okay with it. It's we need something that's a stepping stone to that, and then maybe eventually get there.
This race was so boring that we've spent the last 20 minutes like seriously talking about Dennis's moronic idea that he just thought about off the top of his head while recording for a race he was so interested in he didn't even watch practice.
I couldn't. It was probably best that I couldn't from the sound of
it. I mean, Dennis, like, literally he was sitting there. He was thinking, like, what if we made them leave? And what if hot dogs were round? Man, I wish we had a food podcast because we could discuss why hot dogs should be round.
Wait, wouldn't that just be bologna?
No, round, like a hot dog donut. Like, think of a donut, a donut. But of the consistency. Well, I mean, if you can think about the fact it should be. A hot dog is the number one choking hazard of all food in the United States, and it blocks the esophagus like crazy. If you made a round hot dog and put it on a hamburger bun, like a donut dog, like you could still taste the dopeness that is a hot dog on July 4th under the fireworks, shooting off your gun, drinking your Coors Light, but not have to worry about choking to death.
You know what would be even better if you did that? Bagel
that?
Dogs. Bagel dogs would be perfect.
Tree?
They'd
right.
be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. On that note, I think it's
we're starting a food podcast.
We're starting a food podcast. No, we have what race is coming up? I don't even care.
Sonoma.
Yes, Sonoma. I meant MotoGP, but I've lost it.
I didn't even know MotoGP was doing races. I thought they were a long, long-form parade lap.
Oh, my God. The final dig. No, we have an interesting round coming up next. Oh, yes. We actually, this weekend, this Sunday, while we're in Sonoma and avoiding
Sunday,
spoilers,
Sunday, Sunday.
There will be the Ducati Stomping Ground.
Spielberg
Ring in Austria.
Austria.
Yeah.
Marquez will win.
They've got a lot of motor this year.
He'll win. He barely lost last year. He'll win.
True,
and he'll win
true.
By 6 seconds. Yep.
All right. I Kev set the over-under on that one. All right, everyone. This actually went twice as long as I thought it was going to, considering
Tyler
how much
Rob
we had to talk about. Hey! That one was, like, kind of positive.
Okay.
Follow us all over social media to find out how we're going to give away the Eugene Leverty helmet, which we've now just announced. If you want a t-shirt, hit up the website quick. And, I'm going to be in Sonoma, and I'm printing all the labels and mailing them. So if you order it, like, Thursday, I apologize. It's not going to go out until Monday or Tuesday, but you'll be fine. I promise you'll get it. The website has been working amazingly. Check out riderslaw.com for your legal help, especially in the state of California. And thanks for listening. Like, share, subscribe. Thank you on iTunes, Spotify. Peace.